You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 9th of November. The questions are on the top of your head. We'll get to them on a Facebook Live edition. Plus, is Donovan Mitchell gunning? And how do we use Derek Favors? Plus, a deep dig on some synergy numbers that might expose some of the problems and maybe a few of the answers. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Glad to have you aboard the show. Thanks so much for tuning in. And I'm really looking forward to your questions today on Facebook Live. I feel like there's an angst in Jazz fans after that last performance. We lost a game, and so everyone's freaked out. It was a bad loss, though. I'm not lying to you. It is one of those that gives you a feeling like, oh, my gosh, what's going on? And yesterday's podcast was a little bit like that. So we'll try to dig in and see what we can do to answer your questions for you today. As I think I've already said, I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This show is Locked On Jazz. It's your daily insight to the Utah Jazz with insight, expertise you cannot get anywhere else. And we give it to you on iTunes, your Android, your Alexa, your Google, whatever it is that you use to listen to the show. Today's show is brought to you by Shamrock Auto Group, as our Thursday shows usually are, our Thursday Facebook Live shows. Also, special thanks to the advocates today along the way. And I also, I'm waiting for an email, but I'll probably just mention to you that there's something going on with our friends over at Grip 6. So what I really want today is your questions. For those of you that are live right now, for those of you who are listening on the podcast, hopefully those people are going to give you good questions. We do Facebook Live every Thursday, if you don't already know that. All right, I think that there are two questions that are on everybody's mind, and I'm going to hit those first. They are, is Donovan Mitchell gunning at 21 shots the other night, going 3 of 21 in a historically poor shooting performance? And number two, what do we do to maximize Derek Favors? So those are, I think, the two questions that everybody kind of has going on. The third part of this is I'm going to dig into some synergy stuff that I think's very revealing and shows some of the questions of where we are and what needs to happen, and might be able to give us a few answers. Then I'll get to your questions. Sound good? Let's do it. So let's start with Donovan Mitchell and whether he's gunning or not. And you know what my answer is? I just think he's taking tough shots. I think he's taking the right shots. I went through all 21 he took. I'm not going to bore you by going one by one. For the most part, during the game, I'm looking at these shots and I like them. I'm not thinking to myself, like, ooh, gosh, Donovan, what's up with that? Now, one thing that's happening, there's two things that are happening, okay, in other words, a ton of stuff is going on here. Many of them are why young players in the league shoot badly. The shots he's taking are hard. He's being asked to do a lot. The hard shots he's taking are low percentage shots, and that's leading to some of this, okay? And I don't necessarily know how he fixes this, but he probably, there's a lot of non-answerable questions that are going on here. And what I mean by that is that I don't know if he stops taking those, what happens in the offense. It might be better for Donovan, but I'm not convinced it's better for the team. So here's what I'm talking about. One is he's not good in transition yet. So he's 9 of 27 in transition for the whole season. That's something that I think we were all concerned about when he got drafted, that as great an athlete as he is, he used to be a 2-foot jumper. That makes transition hard. He's adjusting to be a 1-foot jumper. And you'll see in transition in the open court, he's got guys on him in his body and he doesn't get up or he gets caught too far in the glass. He can't find his shooting window. So that's leading to a few misses each night. The next thing you're seeing is, you know, shots that are NBA shots that college kids haven't taken. So Beautiful ball fake from behind the three-point line above the arc. One dribble to your left, rise into the three. That's a great shot. It's an open three. It's an NBA shot. It's a Klay Thompson shot. It's a shot he's going to make. That's a really hard shot when the three-point line is back further than it's ever been before for him. And off the bounce, there's only three guys last year who shot better off the bounce than on catch and shoot. Okay? His catch and shoot game is like perfect. They just didn't drop the other night, actually. But his catch and shoot game is incredible. His feet are right. His body's right. He catches. He's in great position. They didn't go last night. He's probably, you got to hope that they start to go. The other aspect there is that I do think he's probably rushed a little bit because it's an NBA game and some of them are longer shots. Guys, go look at the rookie numbers across the board and you'll see that almost all of them shoot very badly from above the break. So the above the break shot for a rookie player is a very, very difficult shot. So that's some of the catch and shoots. Some of his misses the other night kind of compound on themselves. So what I mean by that is early in the game, he drives into the basket. He gets cut off. It's a rookie play. That's just not that's a shot he got in college. He's not going to get in the NBA. It's too difficult a shot probably for him to be able to, kind of get into the lane and get, well, then, so he misses those. So he adjusts in the game, which is good. But now he's taking free throw line floaters. And those are really, really low percentage shots. And he's going to have to learn either I don't get that far deep or I have to work my way to a pass there or I drive like Rubio does now, has no intention of shooting because he knows he's not going to make that shot. So there's an evolution to his game there that he has to probably garner that will kind of, that'll be the next step. And that's causing some of those. So, I mean, when I looked at floater from the free throw, and I don't like that shot, it's not being a gunner, but that's adjusting to that earlier drove into bodies and missed. He has a handoff stop and pop three on the right side. That's a brutally hard shot. Now, he's going to make that shot. He's going to practice it. This is a classic example of when he got ready for his first NBA season, he didn't realize that's a shot he was going to be taking, and now he is. So he now in the offseason can go practice it, and probably this is why the jump happens year 2 to 3 on most players. So, for example, he came off the base, the right corner, got a handoff from Gobert, takes, I don't even think he took a dribble, stops, pops behind the pick, but he's going full steam ahead, now grabs the handoff, has to stop and control his whole body into a shot that's longer than he's taken before. Like, that's hard. So what you're seeing, that's hard. He has a three that he takes from the top of the key. Beautiful crossover, jab, frees himself, steps back into a top of the key three. Again, brutally hard shot. Brutally hard shot. The right shot, only about 10, 20 guys in the league can get that shot off. Frankly, 21 shot getting anyone shot attempts is a great, has great value. Like, it's an incredible talent. So when you just start to look at these shots, drives into the trees, which he doesn't know how to figure, then he adjusts to that, but they become harder. Then you start looking that you're taking a step to your left off a single bounce on a long three, a crossover step back. Like, these are hard shots for rookies. Getting 21 of them off is probably the best thing he did. I don't leave that thinking he gunned. I don't believe him when he says that he just left each one behind after the game in the locker room on our flagship station. I don't believe that at all. I think it started to eat at him as the night went on. And so then he's pressing a little bit. So in that regard, I do think that night, and now let's see what happens. I got a question. Are we over dipping the Oreo cookie? Hope not. We're dipping the Oreo cookie though. For those who don't know this analogy, if you're new to the show, I talk about young players like Oreo cookies. So an Oreo cookie is awesome. right? Particularly in the United States of America. If you ever go to Canada and have an Oreo cookie, they suck. They don't taste as good. This should terrify you because this means that our FDA is allowing some sort of something in our Oreo cookie that makes it taste the way it is, so it tastes like crack, and you can't only have one, and that they don't allow it in Canada because it's probably not healthy. So that's just a side note that should worry you. But let's go back to the Oreo cookie. The Oreo cookie is like the perfect cookie. It's so good. It's good. But if you dip it in milk, it has a chance to be unbelievable. If you barely dip it, young basketball player, you barely play them, it just kind of is just a regular Oreo cookie. You dip it over, dip it, put it in too much, leave it in there too long, and it crumbles to the bottom and you lose your Oreo cookie. I think that might have happened to Trey Burke. Or Trey Burke wasn't good enough. One of the two, it's hard to tell. Kevin Pelton, who's our guest on Locked On NBA, would tell you this theory has got no validity to it. I totally disagree with him, but I love Kevin. By the way, go listen to Locked On NBA. It's a great show this week. Maybe the best Kevin and I've done. Anyway, the ideal is you dip the Oreo cookie the perfect amount it comes out, and now it's even better than it was otherwise. With Donovan, are we over-dipping the Oreo cookie? It's a concern. Let's keep an eye on it. And the concern is we don't have a lot of other options, so if we start to over-dip the Oreo cookie, do we actually have a way to not over-dip the Oreo cookie? So I think that would be a little bit of the concern. Our Thursday Facebook Live shows are often brought to you by my friends at Shamrock Auto Group. Shamrock Auto Group is out in Pleasant Grove. Rob Taylor built Shamrock Auto Group many years ago because he actually didn't like his own car buying experience. He thought there was a niche in the market. He thought he could do things that were going to be really successful, and in fact, he has. And the first thing I would tell you to look at more than anything else when you look at Shamrock Auto Group is the reviews on Google, cars.com. They're remarkable. Rob makes this like claim that we will make the process easy and pleasant. We'll give you out-the-door pricing in 5 minutes. Just ask. No pressure, no waiting, no drama. They have the nicest cars. They specialize in nearly new trucks. No accidents. Still under factory warranty. You can save thousands. That's his claim. And if you go read the Google reviews, it is so clearly true. It's remarkable. His GM is a guy who used to be a mechanic, so when they're buying the cars, they're getting things you can't get otherwise. They specialize in going getting cars out of California, so they don't have the salt, they don't have the wear, they don't have the tear. He has people that drive from all across the country and come out or fly out to pick up new cars. A lot of his guys are from out of state because they've had such an incredible experience. Just try to find nicer cars anywhere else, you won't be able to do it. You will not find nicer cars anywhere. You will not find a nicer, older car anywhere. You just won't. So call 801-361-9796. Visit shamrockautogroup.com. For Locked On Jazz listeners, ask for the friends and family pricing. Go to the reviews at Google and cars.com, and you will see what Rob has built at Shamrock Auto Group. That's Rob Taylor, not Thomas, Taylor, at 801-361-9796, shamrockauto.com. All right, favors. And then we'll get to your questions. Favors, synergy, and then we'll get to your questions. How do we best use favors? So I've heard some people say, oh, it's too clogged up, and it is different. Like favors and Gobert together from a skill set, I'm not sure anyone else in the NBA is doing it. It is different. The first thought I have is if we're not getting a lot out of favors on the pick and roll. In fact, if the synergy numbers, he's 9 of 20 this year on pick and roll. So that's not good enough. And he used to be a great pick and roll player, and we've got to see if that still exists. One of the reasons we're not getting anything out of favors in the pick and roll is he's not playing backup center anymore, which he didn't really want to do. But by him not playing backup center, he's either on the floor with Gobert, who's our primary pick-and-roll guy and should be, or he's on the floor with Udo, and there's not a lot of space for the pick-and-roll with him. So the first adjustment that I might make if I was Quinn would be to start moving favors back into the backup center position. Now, that means you're taking Udo out of the rotation, who's been really good. But that's tough. And Udo has been really good. And it means that you're now playing Jerebko, Cephalosha, Ingles as your fours for a large part of this game. Okay? Joe Johnson's not available. When Joe comes back, the original model for the team, I think, was that Favors plays the backup five. Favors and Gobert play about 6 minutes together to start each quarter, and then that's probably it. And Favors plays his other 16 minutes a night as the backup center, and Gobert plays 32 minutes a night. And that's, I think, the model that you probably go back to. If you're going, there's been some discussion from people, well, we should take Favors out of the lineup. I don't think, you got to be really careful if you change the starting lineup. One coach used to say to me, if you're going to change one, you got to change two, because you can't single somebody out as though it's their fault. Okay? Favors has tried to add a three-point shot. He's tried to do a lot of things right. He's actually added it a little bit. He's got, you know, four in the last three games, I think. And you cannot, I think you have to be careful on two things about taking Favors out of the lineup. Maybe that's the choice, but the two things I would say is, one, you better be certain whoever you're starting there is going to be better, right? Like, if you start Jarebko instead of Favors or Cephalosha instead of Favors, you better be certain that's going to work, because you might have just lost Derek Favors. Right, that's not an easy coaching decision right there. Using the Jerry Sloan model, you're always better off to make that change 3 days late than 3 days early. Like when C.J. Miles was struggling once, I remember he got taken out of the lineups, and I think C.J. almost had this feeling of like, thank goodness I'm finally out, right? I think that would be my one thought for you, is you better be careful in that regard. I'll stick to that. One is, I think you got to find a way to get Derek back into the pick and roll game as a roller. Two, I think you've got to, I don't think you can afford to change him in the starting lineup because you might lose him. All right. It doesn't mean that I don't think that the starting lineup with Favors and Gobert is a bit wonky and different skill setted than every other team and difficult to deal with. But I do think that's my thought on that. Okay. Some interesting synergy numbers. We're only shooting 37% off the pick and roll. A huge percent as the ball handler. A huge part of this offense is built on the ball handler, is multiple pick and roll actions, right? If you think about Hill, Hayward, Hood, even Joe Johnson a little bit last year. Right now, we have two players that are good on the pick and roll. They are Rodney Hood and Ricky Rubio. But our problem is that our game is built on multiple pick and roll actions in the same possession a lot of times. So when Rubio comes off the pick and roll, creates advantage, kicks over to Hood. Hood comes off the pick and roll, and now he takes advantage of it. Donovan Mitchell on the pick and roll is 13 of 46 shooting. That's an NBA play. Again, rookie, comes in the league, thinks he's ready, then suddenly starts realizing what shots are, now learns in the offseason how to adjust. It's why guys get better. And this is another example of where Donovan is a rookie, isn't ready yet, and he's 13 of 46 on pick and roll, shooting 28%. Joe Ingles, who is playing a lot of pick and roll because he's such a good passer, is 5 of 19 shooting on pick and rolls. He's not a great threat when he's coming off. Alec Burks has always been a very poor pick and roll player. In fact, early in his career, 75% of the time was going away from the pick and blowing up plays, because plays are designated for him to go out to pick. He's 3 of 13 off pick and rolls right now. So you have two guys, Hood shooting 45%, Rubio shooting 46% off the pick and roll. When they're on the floor together, you can try to work that multiple action, but it's a difficult thing right now that only those two guys are playing the pick and roll well. Then you get into, well, do we have good spot-up shooters? You got Ingles, who's a great spot-up shooter. So you can run a pick and roll with Rubio or Hood. And Hood's a decent spot-up shooter right now. But if you're running the pick and roll with Hood and Rubio's outside, he's only shooting 8 of 33 on spot-ups. Favors is 39% on spot-ups. Cephalosha's been okay. He's got an effective field goal percentage of 52. But you start to play this spacing game. All right, so I run a pick and roll with Gobert with Hood. Rubio's spaced. Favors, they're not guarding those two guys. Now all of a sudden that pick and roll with Hood has three guys in the paint, and Gobert can't get the ball. Hood runs the pick and roll with Gobert. Rubio runs the pick and roll with Gobert. It's better. Faves, though, they're not guarding him, really. Your Ingles, they're going to stick to, and you've got the And you've got hood space. That's pretty good if Rodney can knock down shots. But then if you actually get into Rodney's shooting a little bit, where Rodney's really good is as a straight down the barrel shooter. I don't know if they have Rodney's shot chart over the last 2 years. Let me see if I can maybe quickly bring it up. And I don't know that actually this year is matching the same way, but let me see. Has been that he's very, very good straight away. He's not very good on either angle. And he's pretty good in the corners. Well, Ingles is spaced to one quarter, favors his space to the other. When Rubio's coming, you now actually have Rodney, who you probably have to guard and is probably the best option off this, in a spot on the floor where he doesn't, over the last 2 years, has not shot the three very well. This year, angle left, Rodney Hood is 6 of 17. Angle right, he's 2 of 9. So the combined there, he's 8 of 26. That ain't going to cut it. Straight down the barrel, he is awesome. He is 8 of 17. Let's go to last year. Is this a reoccurring trend with Rodney? Because, right, think about the pick and roll. You're running a hot pick and roll in the middle of the floor. Ingles in one corner. Favors kind of mid side, that side, getting in there for the dunker possible. Dunk on a pass from Rudy. Whatever it's going to be. And Rodney is now spaced for a kick-out pass if his guy sneaks into it. But he's not straight ahead. He's not straight away. And his shot chart a year ago, 31% angle right, 29% angle left. That's 6 to 8 points below the league average. Combine the two of them, he was 48 of 160. Like, that's not good enough. Like, that shot. And so Rodney's getting that. That's 30. That can't be right. Yeah, it is. That's 30%. Did I do the math right on that? Because I did that fast and off the top of my head. I hope I did. I don't want to be wrong. 48 divided by 87 plus 73 comes out to 160. Wow. So, and he's, I think we already showed that he was, right? So 30% last year and 8 of 25, 8 of 26 this year. So over the last 2 years, when Rodney Hood's on an angle three, which is, you know, pretty much the shot you're getting off that pick and roll action, he's a 30% shooter. Now, get him straight down the barrel. Man, is he money. He was 47.1% last year, and guess what he is this year? 47.1%. So now, I don't know where to go from there. What else did I have on Synergy? I think that's it. Today's show is brought to you, as we'll get to your questions next. Today's show is also brought to you by the Advocates, Utah Advocates. They're a personal injury attorney for you, largely based on car accidents, there to help you out, there to map out your best experience, there to make sure that you get what you want, which is the best settlement you can have. Make sure that nothing goes wrong, job situation, family health, things of that nature. Make sure that you're treated well. Those are the goals. How do they do it? When I sat down and met with Matt over his nice office over in the avenues, he laid it out for me. They've done this for 25 years, and they have crafted the perfect way to go through this experience. Only understand the base knowledge that only 1% go to trial, only 3% go to arbitration. So now there's a system. Accidents are different, but the process is the same. You have that process, and if you build it, now you're efficient. Theirs is a 106-step process, and they have figured out the craft. They have gotten better and better at it. They use special teams, they call them. The special teams have individual jobs along the way. Get the medical records. Get the insurance records. Deal with this person. Take it through the court system. And then the lawyers are available at each and every step along the way to interact with you and check in with you. And frankly, they make sure you're not forgotten. They have a system where they know when they've talked to you last, when they're interacting with you. So it's Utah Advocates. Accidents are different. Process is the same. They have the process that is efficient. Efficiency means productivity, which means communication to you, which means expediting the process, which means you are taken care of. It means, one, that you get good results. Two, you make sure nothing bad happens. And three, you get treated well. Experts at the task at each and every step of the process. That's what defines Utah Advocates. Visit them at utahadvocates.com. All right, let's go to the questions. All right, shout out to Crystal Snuck, who took a little bit of beating for her Dame Lillard thing and was willing to send me a hello, Mr. Locke, this morning, which I greatly appreciate, and then said, we need Dame Lillard, and I stand by that. Oh, I'd love to have him. All right, James Scott. Who should start, Hood or Mitchell? Hood has not been great at starts, doesn't look to have a breakout season, but Mitchell for all the little mistakes he's made, is putting up potential rookie of the year numbers. I say have faith in the youth, but don't totally give up on Hood. So let's make sure we're not overplaying Donovan. Let's make sure we're not losing Rodney. With that said, Rodney's first quarters are not good enough right now. Why not? Quinn's trying to get him going. It's not clear why that's the case. His third quarters are awesome. That's the weirdest part. His third quarters are absolutely terrific. So why is that? I don't know if I have my numbers up right away on this, and I have a computer program that gives it to me, but I don't know if I have it up. And so why is that? What's going on with Rodney that's the case? And I don't know why he can't get started, but his first quarters are an issue. But I'm not taking him off the bench until he says it's all right. Too much on the line. There's a contract involved there. There's a lot of pressure on this year. I think there's an argument that Rodney comes off the bench and it relieves Rodney of some of the pressure and lets him come in the game and play with the second team and do a bunch of things. On the other end, I also don't think off a 3-of-21 performance you should be anointing the rookie. Right? You got to watch a little bit of the team dynamics as well, where, you know, let's make sure that suddenly everyone doesn't think Donovan's the favorite son to a point he can do no wrong. And again, if you're going to change the lineup, you better decide, you know, you're deciding that to some extent that now that's Rodney's fault. Now, first quarters so far this year, Rodney Hood is shooting 4-of-19. 4-of-19. So that is the concern of how do we get him going. Alec Burks is 4-of-18, so that's not the answer. And so I think it's a legitimate question on how you do that. I'm not sure that I have the answer. I don't love, unless Rodney's fully all right with it and it relieves some pressure and makes him happier, I don't love the idea of taking him out of the starting line, but I would get it if it needs to be done. I mean, I don't know if it needs to be done, if it's a choice. Here's a little bit of the game. It all kind of ties together. So remember I talked about Favors starting at the five, or not starting, Favors playing more at the five to get him involved in the pick and roll. So if that becomes your priority, then that means Cephalosha with and Jerebko are suddenly playing your four. That means your threes now become Ingles and Hood. Your twos become Hood and Mitchell. Your AB gets in there somewhere. And your ones become Rubio and Neto. Does that make sense? So that if you're suddenly pushing Udo out of the rotation, Neto's back playing your point guard. Because you don't have enough minutes of wings, otherwise, unless Royce O'Neal could play. And Royce O'Neal's not bad. If AB doesn't get going at some point, Royce O'Neal might get some minutes there. It's all kind of intertwined. Thoughts of Mitchell starting, so not so much for Mitchell, but for Hood can get against an opposing second unit. Ryan Garner, a similar question. I do think that what we have going on right now with Rodney having to play against number one guys is very, very difficult. How do Rubio and Gobert get better chemistry? I don't know if their chemistry's bad. I asked these questions at the press conference the other day and then was embarrassed afterwards when I watched the game. The little room that is available to Rudy Gobert when he's coming off the pick and roll on drives right now is such that there's just no way to get those looks that we thought Rubio and Gobert were going to get together. Gobert can't even get to the rim on the roll. There's so many guys there. Monica Holt Burby, do you think Rubio's loose style of play is contributing to our poor offense? I'd like to see. There's some things. So in the early offense, the offense is supposed to be, it's a push ahead, but the goal is to have the ball break at the seams early without an action, get into the paint, push it, and then kick out. And Rubio is now pushing up and getting into actions much quicker than than he used to do, than I think was intended in training camp. And so that would be one area where I would say I would like to see if he could get back to pushing and getting the early seams action in the offense that they talked about earlier. I thought Rubio had a very bad game against Philadelphia, and let's just see. Let's give him some time. But it's a legitimate question. If X and Mitchell both reach their potential ceilings, what is their potential relative to other backcourts in the league? Is a top five backcourt combined with an all-NBA center enough to contend? So, Chris Lee, I'm a huge fan of your optimism, but I got to say, like, this is one of those cases where maybe as the hometown announcer, I should be like, yeah, we're wah. So right now, Donovan Mitchell's a career 34% shooter, and Dante Exum is in his career like a 38% shooter. Like, I don't know. I mean, there's signs that Dante really made some growth this summer when his first basketball offseason, but like, I don't even know what their reasonable potential is on either of them. So, I mean, my answer to your question, quite honestly, is like, I don't have any idea. And like to say that they'd be top five, I mean, we're talking Wall, Beal, Thompson, Curry, Lowry, DeRozan, Lillard, McCollum. Like, you've got to have them be the next guys. Seems pretty outlandish, actually. Like, how about top 20? Seems almost outlandish. The past few days, you've talked about Rudy isn't connecting with Rubio, and you've determined a lot of the sagging by defense. What's your take on dribble penetration to break down the defense? Great question, Taylor. That's where the offense was supposed to get the early action, was getting into the paint early to try to create things, and that is not happening like it was supposed to. Neto actually did it a little bit the other night. Any chance Mitchell becomes over-dipped? I think his great character means he'll be fine. Mitch said, great question. I brought that up earlier on the show, Mitch, and you got to be a little careful. And the thing I think you have to be, the problem you have right now is I'm not sure what our other choices are. And so as that happens, I think that is a little bit. My concern is not that he's over dipped, but that if he starts to really struggle and we got to give him a break, I don't know who we give him a break with. That's my concern. Also, we need to bury Burks and give O'Neal a chance to see what we have. We know what Raul is. What can O'Neal be besides reliable D, which is better than Alex? That's from Nathan. I don't want to bury Alec. I think it's, you know, he's had so rare playing basketball healthy. He has not had a very good stretch. It's hard to learn how to play 10, 12 minutes a night. Royce O'Neal is not going to be a star, but he is going to be a rotation player in the NBA, and at some point that may have to happen. Crystal, who I mentioned earlier, gets a shout-out. Monica says, we're too hectic with Mitchell and Rubio running around. We need a grounded and deliberate point guard to help facilitate the other strengths on the floor. Okay? I guess. I mean, I kind of like the fact that Rubio is constantly active. Why has the defense been struggling? I just think that they weren't. Philadelphia was a bad game, right? There were weird, uncharacteristic things we've seen out of that team, and then bad shooting. And I thought Rubio just had a game that was off, and I think he might be the passion that runs this team. So that's a little bit of my thought on that. The defense, and then Houston was unbelievable, and Toronto's great. So, you know, in the NBA, good offenses usually shut down bad defenses, or good offenses beat good defenses. That's why in the playoffs, to win, you have to have a good offense. What we don't know is if you have a good defense, how much you win in the regular season. And that's a little bit of my question. I do want to tell you about this. So I've been telling you about Grip Sixths. Just a quick little note here. And I've been giving you the promo code LOCK20. If you're in Utah, Monday, November 13th through Friday, November 17th, they're having their first Utah appreciation sale. So you have to go to their store. It's in Draper, and they're doing all their Black Friday, Cyber Monday deals all week long next week before the retail shop. So they're selling everything at 40% off. So don't go online and use LOCK20 because this is better. This means their classic belt, which is like 35, which I've talked about is 21. I can do that math. And they have a 3-pack with a hanger that's usually 199 at 60. I can do that math. So anyway, check it out. It's out at I-15, exit 291, 126 75th South off Minute Maid Drive. 126 South, 75th South. It's one block after the Ramada Draper and two blocks before Camping World. So check that out. If you're in that area, next week they're doing that. It's 40% off. If you're thinking about Grip 6 for holiday stuff, it's better than the deal I'm giving you. So there. I mentioned it during the postcast after the Sixers game, and you and Ron Boone talked about it a bit, but do you think Hood is afraid of contact? Mitchell doesn't seem to be in drive, strong to the hoop, and then misses. Is it a strength issue or fear of getting hurt? We need Hood to score and not be afraid. So first off, tip to Rodney. He got 10 free throws the other day. I love that. Really big positive there to Rodney. The two plays the other night where Rodney Hood had layups or dunks if he rose up and exploded were really weird. I don't know what happened. And I've never been there. I don't know what happened there. I haven't seen him much at all. Here's something on Hood that I'm going to pull up that is a little just worth keeping an eye on. I'm not going to go concerning. I'm not going to go that big a deal. So let me see if I can find this. It's going to take me one quick second. So last Rodney, after the All-Star break last year, in the paint, was 17 of 59. So I wrote that down. My notes say knee injury leads to inability to score in the paint and get up 17 of 59 in the paint since the All-Star break, 29%. Okay, so that was what my note says. So far this year, in the paint non-restricted area, he's 6 of 21, and he's only 6 of 11 in the restricted area. So that's 12 of 32. That's a continuation of what I thought was injury-related last year. That's a little better. It's 38%, but that's... And I just think that was in the paint. I don't think that was paint non-restricted area. I can look what his paint non-restricted area is probably worse. So that's a little surprising to me that has carried over again this year. I didn't expect that. Let me see if I can find that to be exact from last year, just to make sure that I'm being. Post All-Star break, 16-17 season, in the paint non-restricted area, or in the paint non-restricted area, he was 7 of 35 post All-Star break. In the paint is exactly what I said. So I had paint. But so paint non-restricted area, which my memory on Rodney is like he gets in there, rises up in that little area. It's a low percentage shot for everybody else, but it's a high percentage shot for him. 7 of 35. And then what I'm saying is this year he's 6 of 21. So now he's 13 of 56 in the paint non-restricted area since the All-Star break. That's surprising. It's worth keeping an eye on. I know I'm ill, but is he talking about Oreo cookies? I think I've taken too many drugs. Yes, I am. Crystal likes Oreo cookies without the icing. Joshua says, favors isn't the issue. He can play with any group on the floor. The issue is lack of go-to guy that the defense has to game plan for, and we need a player that can score. Yeah, probably. It's hard. Sean Wilsey says, win or lose, I'm just watching the Jazz play and compete. How do you think Mitchell will look by All-Star break? Eric Gordon, for the now Rockets, back in his Clipper, is my model and hope for the first year for Donovan Mitchell. And he got going about January 1st. Okay? If you go back and look at his 08-09 season, 6'4", 215, very similar body. He has a great rookie year. I mean, he has a great rookie year. He shoots 46% from the field, 39% from three. He averages 16 points a game. His November, his October was 20%. His November, by the time he was done, was 41%. His December was 47%. His January was 43%. His February was 47%. His March was 46%. And his April was 52%. Donovan's behind that right now, but that's kind of what we're looking at. Now, worth noting, that 08-09 team we're talking about had Baron Davis, had maybe Corey Maggette, might have had Elton Brand. See if I can find it. So he's playing with scorers. It had Baron Davis, Zach Randolph, interesting, and Al Thornton. So he's fourth on the fifth, and Katino Mobley, who only played 11 games. That's why Gordon got more time. So he's fourth on the team in shot attempts. Right now, Mitchell's number one on the team in shot attempts. That's a significant difference. Thank you, Crystal. Do you think the long-term Mitchell minutes come from Hood? Too no. I will try to introduce you to Joe Ingles, Matt. Instead of no, I'm going to try. Important to remember this is a new team. I agree. Mitch Willis says, do you think AB is progressing? He seems to be reverting to old habits. He had a great preseason. He showed all sorts of signs being a different player. And now I'm not even sure. He's got, I mean, this is a guy who's used to playing 35 minutes a night in college. He's just got to learn so much new stuff right now. But he's playing 13 minutes a night. He's shooting 56% from three, so let's give him that. He's shooting 30% on two-point shots, though. So let's see if we can let him just develop a little. Not develop, but just see if he can find a comfort zone. Because we need him. We need him to play well. Sorry. Paul says, I was wondering if the offensive system is fitting the player's strengths. Like, for example, Favors developing a three-point shot when it's not his strengths. One of the Celtics players said, Brad Stevens forms the offensive system based on player's strengths. We can't play to our strengths because we don't have a player who can go to the basket. Would posting up Favors be effective? I mean, the post-up play in the league is a very, very low percentage shot. We did more of it the other night than I had seen us do it in a while. But that's not generally a very efficient offensive play. I guess what I would ask you to write down on a piece of paper, Paul, is what are each of our players' strengths that you're trying to play to? In the case specifically of Boston, it does seem to me that they have a lot of versatile players that do different things, and so that's a little bit. Post-ups this year, Favors is 6 of 10. Now, if he wants to keep that up, that is great. However, let's go look and see what and again, this might, maybe this does work if you do it as a backup center without Gobert on the floor. So there's a little more space and then see if Favors can play out of the post. He's not a great passer out of the post. Now last year's hard cause he was not very healthy, but he was at 49% last year. So that's not bad in the half court. Maybe there's a trying to get, I mean, we went to a little bit more the other night. Maybe there's something to that. Is there something to a rookie player slumping easier through 82 game? I don't know. Understand the question, Colton. Rookies just struggle. This league's too hard. Like, it's, these guys are so good. All right, let's see. What are we at time-wise? We're at 43 minutes. Let's do two more minutes. Is there a trade the Jazz should make to get more offense? If so, who do you trade for and who do you give up? I don't have it. I don't know who it is, and I think we have to be careful that we don't lose our defensive essence in this time period. Is it time to leave the Rudy Favors experiment, start Ingles at power forward, Rodney at small forward, Mitchell at shooting guard? I guess that's a possibility. I think we just became a really average defensive team at that point. But Favors is out. Like, you're just giving up on him. Like, make sure you understand the locker room dynamics with a move like that. Like, D's just, like, if I'm Derek, you know, whoops, probably can't do that. But that's my reaction if I'm Derek, right? Any data if the new timeout rules are speeding up the game as desired seems to me to have the opposite effect. Coaches are using timeouts so they don't lose them. Some of the games have been under 2 hours. The games are overall time is faster, but yes, fourth quarters are choppy, just like I said they were going to be. Austin Nielsen, I know they have struggled a bit lately. Which trade was better, 24 and Lyles for Mitchell or first-round draft pick for Rubio? I love Dennis Lindsay. Both those trades are good trades. Is Rudy frustrated he's not getting the ball? Is he aware he's getting shut down from 8 feet out, and that's why he's not getting the ball? Oh, I'm sure he's frustrated because he wants to be great every single day of the day of the week. They're all frustrated. They want to play better than they played their last game. All right. Miami on Friday, Brooklyn on Saturday. Tickets available to both at UtahJazz.com. Thanks to Shamrock Auto Group as well as the Advocates. Hope you're doing great. This has been Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Now, go tell your Alexa to say, Alexa, play program Locked On NBA. Or say to your Google Home, okay, Google, play podcast Locked On NBA. Because the program with Kevin Pelton is awesome. Have a great day.